Among the many unforgettable moments some 20 years ago at the 1996 Summer Olympics in Atlanta was the U.S. women's gymnastics team thrilling the home crowd by winning gold in the all-around team competition. And the fashion in which it was done was most dramatic. For Shannon Miller, it was just part of what turned out to be a tremendous career that included 7 Olympic medals and 9 World Championship medals, making her the most decorated gymnast in American history. Every gymnast starts young, Shannon. At what age did you start, and what was the motivating factor?
I started gymnastics when I was 5 years old. And I had no idea what gymnastics was. I had never seen it on television. I didn't know anyone who had done it. My parents didn't do gymnastics. I followed my older sister into the sport. And basically she started because we were busy tearing the furniture up in my parents' house, learning to do flips and everything on our own and going crazy on the trampoline. And my parents just thought it would be safer for her to get started. And then they finally allowed me to follow her into it as well.
Was there a moment in the early portion of your career in which you knew that the Olympics would be a possibility for you?
Really, there wasn't. I wasn't one of those kids that at 6 years old said, "Oh, I wanted to win an Olympic gold medal." I really had no idea about that. At the time, I had never seen the Olympics on television. It just wasn't a part of my world. And so for me, it was just being in the gym, seeing the older girls, working hard, and then I got to see them bring home trophies, and I wanted to do that. And I figured if I wanted to bring home a trophy of some sort, I had to work really hard. And I kind of just took it one step at a time. I went to the state competition, qualified for regionals and nationals and whatnot. And then finally in 1991, I made my first world championship team. And that was a turning point for me where I thought, wow, the Olympics is really possible. And I had now at this point seen the 88 Olympics and thought, this is something I really want to do. I want to go out and represent my country on the big stage.
In 1992 would be your first Olympics in Barcelona. How intimidated and possibly overwhelmed were you by the magnitude of the event, especially being, 15 years old?
Yes, I was 15. I'm just a baby. I'm thinking back. But, I think I was, I don't know if it was just too ignorant or what, to be nervous or intimidated. I just didn't know I was supposed to be. And for me, for those that follow my career, I broke my elbow just leading up to the games, just a few months before Barcelona. So for me, even just being on the team was so exciting, and just anything that I would do would be icing on the cake. So for me, I was just so happy to be there. And I think that the first moment when you walk in the arena on that first day of competition and you hear the crowd roar, and for me, I remember looking up in the audience, and on the left-hand side, there were 2 American soldiers, and they were holding up an American flag. And I thought, okay, this is it. If they can do what they do, I can stay on a 4-inch-wide beam. I've got this. So it's just one of those things that it does take a life, take on a life of its own. But at the same time, you have to just remember that, you trained for this, and it's the same 4 events that you're doing every day in the gym. So you just try to not let it overwhelm you in any way.
And Shannon has got her first 2 releases out of the way. She has one more coming up here. Twisting double somersault, and she rocks the landing.
That was the same routine that she performed in the team competition. And let me tell you, this little lady knows the importance of sticking landings. She did an outstanding job. Just throws in a very simple full twist, and she nails it.
A 9.925, so a terrific start for American Shannon Miller.
You would win 2 silvers and 3 bronze medals during those games. One of those silvers was very nearly a gold in the all-around competition where you lost to Tatiana Gutsu, hopefully I'm pronouncing her name correctly, by the closest point margin in Olympic history, and it's still the closest point margin in Olympic history. How did you cope with that?
Is it bad if I say it's still painful today? No, I'm just kidding. For me, at the time, again, at the time, we didn't have social media. Oh, we didn't have cell phones or internet. I didn't look at my media. My parents kept me away from that. I was 15. I wasn't interested in reading the newspaper or watching the news. So I didn't realize what a big deal that was. And at the time, I didn't realize quite how close the margin was. All I'm thinking was, holy cow, I won a medal. I don't even care what color it is. I won a medal. And so, in that moment, to be asked the questions you lost and you were so close. And I'm thinking, but I won a silver medal. This is incredible. So I think I had a very good perspective at the time, which was really, really important and really, I think, healthy for me. I think years since, it's like, man, if I just would have maybe not done that step or not have that foot on my toe. But I think you go through those moments when you think, what if? And then I also go through those moments when I know you've got to have a plan. And I think if I would have won the gold back then, I don't know if I would have stayed around for another 4 years to have the incredible journey that I had along the way, and of course to top it off with the 1996 Olympic Games. So in the end, I think it all worked out for a reason.
Being thrust into these major events at such a young age, whether it's the Olympics or the World Championships, looking back, did it mature you quicker?
In some ways, it matured me quicker, I think. And in other ways, I think I was probably less mature. For me, personally, I was very shy, very, very shy growing up. So being thrust into the limelight, having microphones in my face was very difficult initially. I was fine with cameras. I was fine with millions of people watching me do gymnastics, because I didn't have to talk to them. and that's what scared me. So when I had to start doing interviews, it was difficult at first, but I think through that experience, I was able to find my voice and realize that I did have this platform. I was given this wonderful opportunity to have this platform and to speak about things that are important to others. And of course, these days, I do a lot with women's health, so it really was a great thing for me. But in many ways, I think I was sheltered because I was just in the gym and school, so I didn't have a lot of the social experiences. Those kind of got delayed until my 20s. So that's probably for better or worse. There's certain things that I was more mature in, and other things I wasn't.
So 4 years later, back in the Olympics again in 1996 in Atlanta, certainly the second time around, some nerves might be gone that you might have had in Barcelona. But the fact that it was in the United States, was there a bit of pressure, or was it a benefit having the home gym advantage, so to speak?
I think it worked a little bit both ways. I think, again, 92 came up so quick, and with my elbow injury, I was just so excited to be a part of this team and a little bit ignorant on what this whole experience was about. And over the next 4 years, I really became more of the veteran of the team, and that brings on new challenges and new pressures, and so I had to kind of keep that more in check. And then there's that realization that not only are you competing at the Olympic Games, not only did we win a team bronze in 1992, which means we better do better this year, because the bronze was just the stepping stone. You might as well have won a gold in 92. I mean, it was an incredible achievement for our team. But now everyone, the expectations are set higher, and for us as well. So we wanted to bring home gold. And then, oh, by the way, you're going to be competing on home soil. And that can bring a tremendous amount of pressure. And I think my philosophy was to turn that pressure into, hey, these thousands and thousands of people that are right here in this arena cheering are not adding pressure, they're adding energy. they are helping support us in this journey. And to try to look at it in a positive way really helped us. It really carried us, I think, through the competition.
As you said, being the veteran of the team, someone who had previous Olympic experience, what advice did you lend to the first-timers?
Well, we had a great mix on our team. We had three of us, you know, almost half the team, that had already competed at an Olympics in 1992, me and Terry Strug and Dominic Dawes. So that was a tremendous asset. And then, so you had the four younger girls on the team that were coming up that also helped us in that they, you know, just kind of kept that energy going on those long days, and we've been at this a little bit longer, so just kind of a little bit more years pounding, and they kind of kept us going as well. So I think it wasn't so much me giving them specific advice. So these are seasoned athletes, and they're world championship material. They've been through a zillion competitions. They know how to compete. It's more, how is Olympics different? What does it mean? How do you think of this in the broader terms of, it's not about this one day of competition, this is a history-making event, so let's handle it with dignity, with pride, let's understand the bigger picture here. So I think those were some of the things we talked about, but also just some of the nitty-gritty of being in the Olympics. Some of that's just different when you go through processing and you get your uniform and the day-to-day and the extra security and things like that that are off the field of play that aren't necessarily at other competitions.
This is the only thing Shannon Miller wants, needs to add to her Olympic trophy case, an individual Olympic gold medal.
For a bit of personal redemption, you were able to get the gold medal on the balance beam. In the team competition, it came down to the U.S. and Russia in what would be really the moment of that entire Olympics. The focus of that event centered on Carrie Strug needing a good score on the vault in order for the U.S. to win team gold. As you were watching, Shannon, what were your initial thoughts when you saw Carrie Strug fall and hurt herself on her first attempt?
Well, I think Lia went up, gosh, I think this is a lot of years ago. It's 20 years since we competed. I believe I was third in the lineup. And so I was finished. So this is the time where I was now kind of able to watch the other competitors because I had a thing about watching others compete. I never did it. I really tried to just focus on my routine. So I got to see Carrie vault. And remember, we're down on in the pit. So it's difficult for us to see. We don't see what other people see on television. So we saw her fall. And I just remember thinking, what? It's unreal because Carrie just didn't miss vault. And Dominique Marciano had missed her two vaults. As well, and she was another one. Those were our two best vaulters, and they just didn't miss ever competition, training. So it was just a really kind of odd thing. But, you know, I think we, down the team in the pit, we had the benefit of knowing that the score was already there. So it was less about the score and less about, oh my gosh, did we win gold, and more about, is Carrie okay? We knew she had an injury. You know, we were all kind of beat up, but we knew she had an injury in her leg, you know, prior to and during the competition. So I think those are the things that we were thinking, and certainly I was thinking, is she okay? And when she went down for the second vault, we just saw the trainers heading over to the podium, and that's all we could see. And we weren't really alerted to her status. And next thing we saw her was walking out in the award ceremony. It's what people oftentimes don't understand because it's not it's not something that you can see on television necessarily. It's really, really hectic down on the floor. It is crazy town. And they're kind of yelling at you to walk, walk, go, go, do this, do that. And so we were kind of very confused and not sure what was going on and asking about Carrie, but couldn't get information. And so it was just a very crazy time. And we've had the opportunity to talk about it since then. And it's just one of those moments that will just live in history. It was a tremendous performance from Carrie, and I think at the end of the day, what people need to know and should remember is that regardless of scores, Carrie had no idea. And if it's up to her, she's thinking, if I don't vault and let the team down, I let the country down. And I think that just goes to show what an extraordinary athlete and mindset she has, where she was willing to put it all on the line.
Is hurt. She is hurt badly. She has either twisted her ankle or something worse. She hurt herself on the first vault. Probably the last thing she should have done was vault again, but she did, and now she is in a lot of pain.
The amazing thing about it, though, John, she raised her hands overhead. Her head, she finished the vault.
Standing on one leg. We have got to find out if she's a 9.712. She has done it. Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team.
Talk about the attention soon after that took place, both for Carrie and for the team, from the national media to just fans in Atlanta and fans around the country. Talk about the whirlwind of attention that came with that gold medal.
It really was a whirlwind. We went from the gold medal podium to being whisked off to do countless media. And again, we grew up, I think most of us grew up fairly sheltered and focused on gymnastics, not focused on media and how much we were getting and what shows we were doing and that kind of thing. It was just a little bit of a different world. And so I don't think we even truly understood half of what we were doing and how really cool it was to have the opportunity to do all of these different things. But certainly the night after competition was a crazy one. Then, of course, we had more individual competitions to go, and then after the gymnastics portion ended, then it got really crazy. For 2 weeks, it was just absolutely nonstop, and then that continued on because then we toured for, I believe we went 99 cities on tour for a year and a half, and I think that was maybe some of the best times we ever had because we really could bond as people and as a team. Whereas, before the Olympic Games, you're training together for a couple weeks, but it was a lot more spread out. It wasn't as centralized as it is these days with the team. So being on tour together on a tour bus for close to a year and a half was when we really got to know each other.
The physical attributes needed to be successful in gymnastics, regardless of the apparatus, are a given. But what about the mental aspects, blocking out any distractions, overcoming a misstep, trying not to commit a fault? How important is a proper mindset?
It's absolutely critical, and I think that's the case in any sport. You can be talented, you can work hard, but if you don't have the mentality, depending on what sport it is, and of course with gymnastics, you have to be able to block out the crowd, but you need to be able to draw on them when needed. I remember just being able to block out the crowd. I wouldn't even hear a thing during portions of my routine, but right before a tumbling mat on floor, oh man, I would let that audience in. Even if they were yelling and cheering for someone else, I would pretend it was for me because I needed that adrenaline. I needed that push to get through that that tumbling path. So it's being able to, I think, have that flow of allowing the audience in and out when it's needed. And And I think also the mentality of get back up. You're going to have mistakes. And far too many times I see athletes falter. And instead of putting it behind them and saying, okay, I need to really buckle down the rest of this routine and make sure I make no more mistakes, instead they let it get to them. And I know I did this as a young athlete as well. You start letting it get to you, and then you make another mistake. And then another mistake, and that's when you get into real big trouble. So you have to be able to put those problems behind you and get back up and carry on as if nothing happened.
The retirement for gymnasts, and I say that using quotation marks, comes so relatively early in life, somewhat similar to, you know, say a tennis player maybe a little bit older. After your competitive gymnast career ended, you went to college, law school, and have started organizations dealing with health and fitness. How was your transition from athlete to, in some semblance, a real-world lifestyle?
The transition was tough. And I talk about it often because I think athletes should understand that it's not always an easy transition. And for some, it is very, very difficult. You go from one day up on that stage, and you've got thousands and thousands of people yelling for you, and you've got that support system. You're in the gym every day with people that love what they do just as much as you do, and it's the sport, and you can kind of rally together. You're spending 40-plus hours a week together training. And you go from all of that to nothing. And maybe go back to school. And I think school for me was an essential part of me moving successfully from one career kind of, I guess, to the next. Because it was the one stable thing in my life. And, of course, I had a very good support system with my family, my parents. But school was there, so I could always rely on homework to do and tests to be taken, and I had to be up and ready for that. But I did go through a period in my early 20s where I was a bit lost, and I didn't know how to work out as a normal person. I only knew how to stay in shape and eat for, you know, Olympic training. And I went from 40-plus hours a week to zero activity, gained weight, lost sight of health, had little contact with those friends and those people that I considered my family in gymnastics, and that was a really hard transition for me. So I had to kind of learn to get out of my shell. Gymnastics gave me that opportunity to feel confident, have greater self-esteem, and when I didn't have that leotard to put on, I reverted back to kind of low self-esteem, low confidence, and I had to find that again by basically trial and error and trying new things, and found out I really liked to challenge myself outside of the gym as well, and so that has helped me kind of transition to real life. But it is a tough one. Professional athletes, Olympic athletes, so many go through this.
Yeah, the greatest challenge you faced certainly about 5 years ago in February 2011. If you could, take us back to your thoughts after the initial diagnosis of cancer.
So 2010, the summer of 2010, I launched my company. It was devoted to women's health and wellness, and I was really crazy busy. Lots of things going on. I actually called up to cancel my doctor's appointment, which I realized probably wasn't a good idea since I am focused on health and wellness for women. So I called back up. I took the first available appointment, and that morning I found out I had a baseball-sized tumor on my left ovary. And, yes, of course, it was a shock. I did not feel like I had any signs or symptoms or health issues. It was kind of a no-brainer kind of check this off my list type of exam. And in that morning, my entire world changed. My son was about 14 months old when I went through surgery and then started chemotherapy. It was a malignant tumor, form of ovarian cancer. But I was very lucky. It was caught early, and it's something that has just been a period of my life where It was incredibly difficult, incredibly trying, but it's one of those journeys that has made me stronger and certainly more passionate about what I do each day.
Your story, your journey to battle through this disease and to eventually become cancer-free later on in 2011 and eventually have another child in 2013 was of great influence to many indirectly. But were there some who you may have met or been in touch with that were in a similar situation to you, and what advice did you provide them?
Well, I like to talk about the advice that I received as much as any advice that I might give. One of the things I get the opportunity to do with my company is I get to talk to women across the country almost every day, which is absolutely incredible. And I'm not sure a day that goes by that I don't have some correspondence with a woman or a family member of a woman going through a difficult time. It may not always be ovarian cancer. It could be any kind of cancer or any health issue that they're going through. And I like to give some of the advice that I got prior to starting chemotherapy. I had a friend who is kind of in the gymnastics community as well. He's followed my career. He's been a part of my career for many years, and we were at an event, and it was 2 days before I started chemo, and he pulled me aside, and he said, "I know what you're going through." He had battled his own issue, and he said, "Look, I watched you fall off the beam for a decade, but you always got back up, and chemotherapy, it's going to be the same thing. You're going to have days, you just fall. You're going to fall. Just keep getting back up." And so that's what I try to talk about. And getting back up means very different things to many people because everyone's got their own journey and it's always different. It's very individual. But to have that positive attitude, to rely on your faith and to be able to take those baby steps and set those goals for each day. Maybe getting back up today means I can walk around the dining room table twice before I go lie back down. Or maybe it means today I'm going to laugh three times because yesterday I laughed twice. Getting back up means different things, but that's really what I try to talk about is, you know, how do you fight back by standing up and saying, you know what, I'm going to fight, I'm going to be here, I'm going to get back up.
Now, as the 2016 Olympics are soon upon us, those that make up the U.S. team this year will try to follow the footsteps of you and the six other members of that 96 team. And those young women who, many if not all of them, obviously the team hasn't been made up at this point, many of those, if not all, weren't even born back then, not to make you or me feel old, are they probably using those feats from you and the rest of that team as inspiration. Are you amazed how the legacy of that team has continued to live on two decades later?
Well, it really is incredible. And I think once you get into the sport, you find that it really is a small family. I didn't watch, like I said, a lot of Olympics growing up, not until really the 88 Olympics. I was too young in 84. But I still learned who Mary Lou Retton was. You learn about the history of the sport, you learn about the legends of the sport, and you carry on with that legacy and try to further that. And I think that's a great thing for the sport of gymnastics. And I do think it makes me feel old sometimes when those gymnasts were not necessarily born when we competed, but they know about it, and I think it's a really good thing for them to kind of take that torch and run with it. And I think the girls, and of course the team has not been chosen, but the girls that are vying for that team, they understand the history, and they are doing a tremendous job of really just taking what we started and just kind of blowing it out of the water and solidifying our country's place as the top gymnastics team year after year after year.
Despite narrowly losing out on gold in the 1992 all-around individual competition, the Barcelona Games ended with Shannon Miller earning the most medals among all competing U.S. athletes. This is Brian Wright thanking Shannon for joining us and thanking you for listening to this latest episode of Profiles in Sports.